Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications. Today, we bring you a full show from the floor of Manitoba Ag Days, held in Brandon, Manitoba from January 16th through 18th. You'll hear about work being done to promote better mental health on the farm.
It's just, it started more conversations than what we thought if we didn't speak up about it.
Plans to merge five Manitoba producer groups.
So by making it one legal entity, could we realize even more benefits? And that's what we're really trying to figure out and discuss here with the members.
Plus, the latest on the markets.
You know, unfortunately, we might have a couple of weeks, years yet to go.
All on Between the Rows with this week's host, Gord Gilmore.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Gord Gilmore. We come to you today from Brandon, Manitoba, and the Ag Days Indoor Farm Show. One set of speakers has brought the issue of mental health on the farm to the forefront this year. I had a chance to sit down and speak with Watrous, Saskatchewan area producer Leslie Kelly and Brandon University therapist Marcia Harris. They told us about their experiences working for better mental health on the farm.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you.
So let's just jump right in. I think that there's a perception that agriculture is somehow special and different and that nobody could possibly understand what goes on the farm, and that maybe prevents people from reaching out. Do you think that that's accurate? Leslie, let's start with you.
Well, we farm about 6,000 acres at Water, Saskatchewan with my mom and my dad and my hubby and my brother. And I've grown up, like, all I know is agriculture. And what I love most about the industry is that it's built on strength and perseverance, but also that could be our greatest weakness as well. My hubby, he has anxiety, and he was the one who put up his hand and said, something's going on, and I need help. I don't know what it is. And I think from, he was able to do that because on our farm, we were very deliberate when we got more involved in creating a culture of being open and transparent, and you can't do that overnight. It takes lots of time and lots of hard work, lots of putting your ideas out there, how you're feeling, being vulnerable. But we were very deliberate in creating a culture where family comes first, because without family, you don't have farm.
Marcia, what's your thoughts on this?
Well, I'm a marriage and family therapist, like you said, and I practice in rural Manitoba. And what we do know about farming communities and people who are help-seeking is they like to seek help from people who understand their industry. And so we're fortunate in that in rural Manitoba, a lot of people grew up rurally and came back to work as clinicians out this way. So we're fortunate that way that we have a number of clinicians who do have experience either living and working on the farm and working off the farm. So we're quite fortunate that way. But I do agree that it is a part of the stigma of reaching out for support is that we also know that farmers who've reached out for support in the past and have had a very good experience with that are more likely to do it again, and they're more likely to refer a friend or neighbor. Those who haven't reached out for support before are concerned about what that might mean for them and the stigma attached to it. So there's a little bit of both going on, I would say.
And it is hard to, I would say in agriculture, it's hard to reach out because it doesn't just affect your family, but it affects your business and how your lender will see you. And that could have a detrimental impact on how you farm and what the other businesses that you deal with. So there is the notion that if you do speak up, what are the barriers? But I think that through my hubby's story, is it opened more doors, more conversations, more people saying, "Hey, I'm going through the same exact thing, and I didn't know that you also had that, or you're going through that, and what can we do?" And it's just it started more conversations than what we thought if we didn't speak up about it.
So, Marcia, do you think then that, and I'm going to ask you this question as well,
yeah,
for both of you, I'll start with you, Marcia. Is agriculture then becoming more culturally accepting of these sort of challenges? Are we willing to talk about them? Are we kind of getting beyond that kind of what I call a walk-it-off mentality, right? Your thoughts on that?
I think that as the generations progress and we start noticing more and communicating more, like what Kelly was talking about, mm-hmm. about mental health, that the stigma is decreasing. You'll notice the research from the early 2000s talks about that stiff upper lip and just making do on your own. And now you have these conversations in very, very public places and people are open to discussing mental health, maybe as a theoretical idea and maybe not a personal concept. But even the theoretical conversations are happening, which I think is wonderful. So I think through the generations, we've worked really hard at breaking down the stigma. So we have the generation above us to thank for all of that hard work.
And I think as a general, you know, society, we are moving that needle. I've seen within our industry just the last 6 months, more online conversations about this topic and, you know, connecting. Now we're in a situation where through social media you can connect with so many producers across the world versus maybe before you might have only been able to reach out to your neighbors. So we're seeing where, you know, more conversations both at the dinner table but also online, because that's where people where they want to have the conversations. I would say it depends.
Mm-hmm. And I think you raise an interesting point when you talk about that ability to go onto an online platform. Mm-hmm. One of the things I know historically that folks have really struggled with is accessing any resources at all in, you know, rural Manitoba, rural Saskatchewan, that sort of thing. And I think that this kind of breaks that paradigm up a bit, does it not? Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, I would say, you know, resources in rural communities are always a challenge. And we are so fortunate to have something like the Farm Stress Line. That's something that my hubby called in the middle of the night because he didn't know what was going on. And he knew that he was going through something and needed to talk. And I don't know what he would have done if he didn't have that. When it comes to resources for, let's say, producers with livestock that are unable to leave their farm, that is a whole different challenge. So I think with having the conversations, building more awareness, knowing where we need resources to help other producers, we've traveled into the city to get further help. That's been a great support for us, but it also depends on where I guess your farm is, what you do on your farm to help you get those resources.
And your thoughts, Marcia?
I agree. I think that in-person counseling or therapy or getting in-person supports is really important if you can. And that's very challenging because for my practice, I've got people that I work with during harvest and we're like, okay, if it rains on Wednesday, you're coming in. But if it doesn't rain on Wednesday, it'll probably rain on Thursday. So let's reserve a couple of days so that we know that you can get in for an appointment. So those online resources really cut back on the stigma of everyone's going to see my pickup truck parked outside that office. I don't know if I want that. But also the ability that you can use your Bluetooth and talk on the phone when you're in your combine or you're, you know, driving down the gravel road. You can use those resources. You can use an online resource. You can use the telephone resource. So we're very fortunate in Manitoba to have the Farm and Rural Support Stress Line that we do have. They're wonderful people, and they all have farming backgrounds.
And what I've learned recently, I didn't know this, I would say about a year ago, is now there's such courses available for, it's like mental health first aid. So on the farm, we have our first aid, where if someone were to cut their thumb, we can help and give them that support. But going through that, and as a caregiver, I didn't know what to do for my hubby when he was going through a panic attack. So now knowing that there are mental health first aid courses out there to help both those individuals that have a mental illness and those that, you know, provide that support or that caregiver role.
That's interesting. Where did you get that sort of certification, that knowledge?
Just through conversations as to this is what my husband needs, but this is also what I need because I'm here to help him and I have to put myself in his shoes. And what do I need to do to provide him that extra support that he needs? And at the time, like, we didn't even know what that looked like. But through conversations, talking to more people, you know, going online, that helped us.
And one final question then, and I'll start with you, Leslie, and then back over to you, Marcia. What can people do to protect their own mental health and the mental health of their loved ones then? Are there sort of some, I realize that's a complex question and it'll vary with each individual situation, but I suspect there are probably some core principles that you can stick to.
Yeah, I would say for us, through our journey, we've learned that, you know, find what works for you. So for myself, It's putting yourself on the to-do list. And I would say, you know, 5 years ago before kids, we weren't necessarily doing that. And so for me, I run, I love cooking, spending time with friends, being around my husband. For him, he loves to play hockey, he loves listening to music, he loves working out. Those are his stress relievers. But it's creating an environment that, you know, you are not alone, and I'm here to help you and I'm here to support you. And once you have that, it opens the door to conversations, because conversations are, they bridge people, or they bring people together, they bridge gaps, and that's helped my husband and I.
I think that's a key point right there, is that crippling feeling of aloneness mm-hmm. when you're going through something like this. It must be just devastating if you don't know if you can reach out to somebody, you have no idea how to reach out to somebody. That's a tough road to hoe. Marcia, what were your thoughts on this?
I just love what Kelly was saying, because the number one thing that I always recommend is some form of connection. So it might be through friends and family, it might be through a self-help group or an online chat forum, but we all have, it's an innate human feature that we all have the need to feel loved and connected. And so talking about what's going on for us in whatever way we can is vital. I think the other ways to protect our own mental health and our loved ones' mental health, I think we sometimes make it really complicated, and I don't think it has to be. I think that focusing on some of the basics, like getting a good restorative night's sleep, eating some nutritious food so that you can think well and your body is doing what it needs to do. And I think that when we think about mental health, we need to sometimes start the conversations earlier so that we get do the prevention work, so that we're not seeking help at a very, very, very difficult time. We're actually seeking help much earlier, and so the treatment is easier. The other thing I would suggest about protecting our own mental health and other people's mental health is to take notice of your life around you, and try not to go about life without mindfully paying attention, without just putting one foot in front of the other to get through to the end of the day, and actually take notice of your day and take notice of your thoughts. So I think that sometimes we can have some really, really negative thoughts, and they can spiral us down into some pretty terrible places. So if we can take note of that and try to figure out how to change that problem-saturated language within our own minds and maybe within our conversations with others, that might be a preventative feature. But I think asking for help early would be my number one recommendation, if that's possible.
Well, it's an interesting point you raise, because I talk to farmers every day, and they talk about the importance of intervening early in issues in their crops, for example, right? You know, I want to find that disease early so I can root it out while it's cheap to do it, right? We're really talking about the same thing here, aren't we?
Exactly the same thing. Exactly. We want to do that preventative work, which, you know, we're sitting here at Ag Days, and there's a lot of preventative mechanisms for the farm that are sitting right around us. So this is one of the things that Kelly and I are working towards, is doing some prevention work here today.
Well, great. Thank you so much for joining us.
That was Watrous, Saskatchewan area farmer Leslie Kelly and Marcia Harris of Brandon University. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Gord Gilmore. Later, we'll be speaking to PI Financial's David Durbin about grain markets, the economy, and whether or not it's suddenly feeling a lot like the 80s around here. First, though, here's a discussion with Synthesis Agri-Food Network's Rob Hannum, who's the consultant working on the proposed merger of Manitoba Commodity Groups. This is Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Gord Gilmore. We're joined now by Rob Hannum of Synthesis Agri-Food Network. Rob is spearheading efforts to educate farmers about the merger proposal between five Manitoba commodity groups. Rob, tell me a bit about the process that you're now engaged in.
Great. Well, thanks for having me as part of your program. It's been a great process. I do management consulting work with farms and farm organizations across Canada, and I was asked by the steering committee of these five groups to help out and be sort of the leader or facilitator to pull together a proposal so that farmers can react to it. And so the steering committee is made up of two farmer directors from each of the five groups, so those 10 farmers, as well as the four staff members from the groups. And I'm working for that team and just facilitating getting their ideas out on paper into a proposal that farmer members can react to.
So what in broad strokes then is the proposal that's on the table? What's it going to mean for farmers?
Okay, it's a great question, because these groups are already collaborating well together. Four of the five groups are co-located in an office together in Carman, Manitoba. They're sharing some staff, they're sharing some resources. So it's already a very good situation where they're working together because their farmer members are in common. Most farmers here grow five or seven crops here in Manitoba. And so you're already a member of three or four of these organizations on any typical year based on your crop rotation. What is the proposal? So can we go to the next level by legally or formally amalgamating from five separate legal entities into one? So despite all the great collaborations, there still are some overlaps. And those, you naturally would have that overlap, given you've got five separate legal entities. So by making it one legal entity, could we realize even more benefits? And that's what we're really trying to figure out and discuss here with the members.
Now, what are some of the benefits that you can kind of see top line then?
So biggest benefit is research and agronomy. Some groups are doing a better job at leveraging extra government funding. Some groups have research equipment that the other groups could use. Some groups have a better software system and management system of managing and tracking research projects. As these groups grow and these crops are growing, they'll need more of that. So, sharing those best practices, especially in research and agronomy, is a real benefit. And that's what most of what these groups do. 60 to 72% of their budgets are on research and agronomy. So that's what these groups do, and that's going to be the biggest benefit, where they'll have more impact and more return on research.
Now, one criticism I've heard, or not even so much criticism, but one objection to the plan I've heard, is that there's some concern that smaller acre crops will lose out in the deal. Have you heard that criticism, and if so, what is your response to it?
Yeah, great question. I have heard that. We've been doing consultation meetings last week and this week across the province. I had three meetings in rural Manitoba last week, and at two of those meetings, it was brought up to me. One gentleman said, I'm worried that edible beans won't get its fair shake. Another gentleman said, field peas is what I want. We need more research in that area. I think it might get lost here among the bigger crops like wheat or soybeans. And fair points. So nobody in the steering committee or the boards of these groups is setting out that smaller crops would get lost. Of course, that's not the intent. But how do we ensure? How do we make sure? A suggestion that came in last week was, why don't we just write that into the bylaws? Fair enough. Good idea. So I think that's what we'll likely be proposing back from these meetings, that idea of just writing into the bylaws, and the steering committee will receive this in my feedback report, and then they can decide, we should do it or not. But we'll likely do it. We'll likely write in the bylaws that each crop that receives a levy, will have research and agronomy work in that crop every year. So we'll make sure in writing that it's there. But the board also wants flexibility to be able to invest, a bit more in this crop this year or a bit less in it next year, depending on the research priorities, depending on the quality of the research projects. Like, we wouldn't want to force the board's hand to spend money on a project if there's not really any good projects that year for that particular crop. So those are some of the discussions we've had. I heard the flip side as well. On Friday at a meeting, one of the guys said, the smaller crops are actually going to be benefiting from this because on their own, as a standalone organization with half a staff person, they really can't do anything. Mm-hmm. And the farmer directors who are running them today are burning out. They're spending 30 days away from their farm. They're doing the books for the organization. It's unsustainable. So these crops get a chance to be part of a bigger group and will benefit from that. So I've heard it both ways.
So you were saying earlier that you're getting feedback and you're going to be including it in your report. This really is then the farmers' opportunity to have their say individually as to what they want to see in this transformation of these organizations.
Absolutely. This is what we call the consultation period. So I worked with the steering committee from June until November to come up with these ideas and plans. We had several meetings and discussions. We went backwards, we went forwards, and we came out and published the proposal in mid-December. And so that's kind of the date where here we've got something, react to it. And that leads up and we'll close at the annual general meetings of these five groups in February at Crop Connect. We're here at Ag Days, and we're halfway through that kind of consultation period. So we created a temporary website mbcrops.ca. So any of the producer members can go to mbcrops.ca and see the proposal. I suspect we're going to have updates on that in about 2 weeks based on the feedback we've had today. We'll put an update report. Here's the feedback we had. Here's the survey results. And we'll publish the update. So I encourage farmers, if you're keen on this, if you're growing these crops, it's your levy we're talking about. So go to the website, mbcrops.ca. Check it out. You could also send me a direct email there as well. My address or my email address, we've set up a temporary email address for this consultation period, and that's on the website as well.
And then once this consultation process is completed and it wraps up in February, we're looking at about another year before there's a vote then. It'll be at the next Crop Connect in 2019, is
that's that? Right. Yeah. The steering committee will, you know, receive my report. They will each take it back to their five boards of directors. Those directors will decide, do we keep going with this or do we adopt some of these changes? And those farmer directors will decide the future. And if it continues, I suspect, you know, there's some many good ideas we'll incorporate and it'll move forward from there. And you're bang on that if it keeps going, the decision point for farmer members to say, yeah, here's the final proposal, here's what the bylaws, here's what a proposed budget would be, here's exactly what it would look like, that would be a year from now, February 2019.
That's great, Rob. Thanks a lot for your time, and I'm sure that we'll be talking to you again between now and February 2019. You're listening to Between the Rows, and I'm your host this week, Gord Gilmore. Now it's time to turn to the markets. David Derwin of PI Financial joined us for a discussion about the general economic trends, how it's similar and different from what we've seen in years past, and what it could mean to you. From Ag Days, we're joined now by David Derwin of PI Financial Corporation. David, let's talk a little bit about the markets and about the economy generally. Sometimes I look around and I feel like we're kind of stuck back in the 80s again. We're in a period of low grain prices. There's not much bright light on the horizon. There are a few other things going on that kind of remind me of it as well. Are we in for another bout of the bad old days?
First, thanks for having me on. It's always a pleasure to chat and talk markets with you. And you know, you look back historically, and I am a big believer of long-term trends and looking at charts, and definitely there are some similarities in terms of what we've seen now as what we would have had in, say, in the late 80s. And number one, Canadian dollar is sitting around 75 to 80 cents right now, and that's pretty much where it was at that period of time. I think the big difference, of course, is interest rates. You know, back then, government bond yields around 9, 10%, and now we're sitting at about 2, 3%. So that is a big difference. But on the grain front, we are going to go through these periods of times, these cycles where prices are quite low, and we're going through one of them now where after a couple of really good strong years, we've come into a couple of weaker years, and you know, unfortunately we might have a couple of weaker years yet to go.
When you say a couple, that gives me some hope, because I remember that one, that last boat going on forever. What's different then that you're looking at it evaporating a bit more quickly?
Well, I mean, a couple years can turn into a couple years every couple years. So, you know, you got to sort of follow those trends and what's happening. But I think it's just the fact that we have seen prices stay up fairly well. Yes, they've come down, but we've come to a level, and it seems to happen every generation, where a lot of commodity prices have a bit of a move, a pop higher, and then they'll go sideways until the next level. And the bit of positive news is that we have perhaps reached that bottom of that new level. So downside, I wouldn't say is as much as what upside could be, but we could grind in these levels for quite a while, which does turn into a bit of a sort of an unfortunate, bit more of a pessimistic situation.
But you're predicting that sort of sideways grind with sort of a tick up, a tick down here and there. That makes for marketing opportunities and pricing opportunities, does it not? Can you tell us a bit about that? What's marketing look like in this environment?
You know, and you're exactly right, because when you have prices that are low, a little bit weaker, you got to be very mindful of your, you know, cost of production, what your break-even levels are, and then capturing and finding those prices that still make sense. So those opportunities will always come. There's always going to be a rally of 50 cents, a dollar a bushel on beans or canola. And I would say the key is to have all the marketing tools in place to capture that. So they might not be as long-lived, but they will come, right? Markets don't just go straight down. There's always opportunities that come by, just like last summer in hard red spring wheat when we saw that rally. There was some really good pricing opportunities there for those who were prepared and could capture them.
And that's how you win over time, is it not? Is it to be prepared to move a bit more quickly?
I would say so, because, you know, you're not going to be right every time, but as long as you're right over time, and that means winning, right? A lot of singles and doubles win ball games. You don't need to hit home runs all the time. You know, sure and steady can also win that race, and also being very mindful of the other farm business management issues to deal with, to, you know, cut costs here, be more efficient there, increase yields. It all works together.
So then, changing gears a bit from the big picture to sort of a little bit more in the coming months, what are you going to be looking at in 2018 in terms of market movers?
Well, the two markets that have held up better are, well, the oil seeds, canola, soybean prices have held up a little bit better. Wheat can be more challenging, although our hard red spring has still got some fairly good premiums, so you want to make sure you capture those, and there are ways in the markets you can use the tools to capture that. So the biggest risk is as always, is, you know, let's be ready to capture those upside, but don't just assume that it's going to be upside. You got to be prepared to say, well, this market is actually going lower. We've got to do something about it.
Well, that's great. Thank you very much for your time.
Always great to be here. Thank you.
That's another edition of Between the Rows from Ag Days in Brandon, Manitoba. I'm your host, Gord Gilmore, wishing you a great week. Stay warm, everyone.
Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. We'd love to hear what you think of the show and invite you to send your comments to btr@farmmedia.com or visit us at membersgetmore.ca and sign up today.